This is episode one from the very first Beyond the Barbell road trip. You guys will hear from Blair as he lets you guys know that I am actually not in attendance with my four kids at home, was not able to break away, but he is going to interview on this episode Tommy Hackenbruch. And the guy probably needs no introduction to most of you guys, but I thought I'd just jump in here and let you guys know what happened. We had Blair and Phoenix Phillips go out onto a road trip. They drove from California to Utah, and then from Utah into Colorado, and then back over a four-day span. I was truly hoping that Blair would flounder without me, and as you listen to this episode, you hear he does a really great job holding down the show by himself.
Sweet. That'll work. All right. Welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. I'm Blair Morrison. We are sitting here at Ute CrossFit in Salt Lake City with the man, Tommy Hackenbruch. He is a, four-time CrossFit Games individual competitor?
Yep.
And then three times with the Affiliate Cup?
Yeah.
Two-time champ?
Yes.
It's quite the man. Thanks, Tommy.
Hey, thanks for having me on here. It's great being here. Love listening to you guys. And just excited to talk shop and, you know, maybe learn something and maybe share something.
I'm just dishing out knowledge all day. But we should announce to our listeners that we are without the other half of the BTB hosting crew. Ben Alderman could not make the trip out to Utah, so we pour a little out for him today. Hopefully I can try to hang on and keep this thing flowing.
Pour a little of my Frosty.
Yeah, your Wendy's Frosty. So for those of you who are not watching on video, Tommy just strolled in with a Wendy's burger and Frosty from next door. So he's definitely paleo.
Yeah, I'm hungry, man. Hungry. Worked out just before this. I had to shout out Blair halfway through my workout. I kind of flipped the script. I'm like, hey, Blair, guess what? Your warm-up is my workout. I've been relegated to 5 minutes of 10 seconds hard, 50 seconds easy on the assault bike. And that was a good workout for me today. So,
all right. So what's the deal with that? You're scaling back training, or is that just today?
Yeah, no, that's in general. I love training, and I still will hit it hard, although I do pay a severe price for it. I'm just doing it for the enjoyment of it right now and for the love of it. I'm trying to stay at a relatively, like, decent level just to keep myself from, like, total embarrassment.
Or you don't want to have a dad body yet?
Not quite yet, but I'm definitely on track. There's been a big shift, I guess. It's been going on for a while. I don't think I've ever been all in with the CrossFit Games, although I was very, very close to that. You know, and I think very few people actually are as far as athletes. But, like, my son was 10 months old the first year I competed in Aromas. So, you know, I think having kids definitely shifts the focus for a lot of people. And I'm sure you've talked to plenty of guys and experienced it yourself. But really, over the last year, there's been a huge shift for me. And I've chosen to be Tommy the professional versus Tommy the professional exerciser. And it's been, you know, it was a little bit weird, but it's actually been, like, very exciting and kind of motivating, liberating, I guess, to just, like, really make the choice to do it. I was kind of fighting this inner struggle, you know, for a while, trying to wear too many hats and do too many things. So, just found a new passion for coaching people and teaching people and helping people. And it's just a little bit different channel for it than, what I was doing.
Yeah. I think, you know, Ben and I are in that age range where we're kind of making those types of decisions. And we talk to a lot of athletes who have been at or near the top of the game for a long time and are transitioning for one reason or another. For you, I mean, you have the kind of an interesting path competitively as an athlete, being an individual, then at your peak, really deciding to do the team instead, and then going back to the individual and then back to the team. So you've kind of, like, you've been making choices all along because you wanted to do them, not necessarily because you were forced to. And I think that's kind of interesting. Maybe you can talk to some of those choices and why you're making them and others aren't.
Yeah, that is an interesting way. I'm not really in the seminar business, but I've done a few kind of like Tommy Hackenbrook experience or whatever you want to call it, you know. And basically kind of the material I came up with, a big part of it, I think the question I've gotten asked most over the last 7 years is, how do you find balance? And my answer is usually I don't.
I'm a total failure at balance. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a lot of professionals that I think I have, you know, kind of a very specific demographic that I've inspired of people who have families but still want to compete, or, you know, people who are competitive and want to be, you know, successful in other areas. And, you know, it just definitely takes a weird personality gene, I think, to take that stuff on. But the main thing, back to like when I've kind of tried to share knowledge with people, what really relates with me is it comes down to prioritizing, you know, and everything, like prioritizing everything, you know, and just knowing. It's kind of like a brutally honest self-assessment process of knowing, you know, who you are and what you stand for and what you want in life and what really drives you, you know, the whole like kind of know your why. So if you can tap into that, then it's easy to set your priorities. And once your priorities are set, it's easy to make the right decision. So there's been times I've pursued the individual at the CrossFit Games because of where I was in my life. There's been times where I did the team. And this year I stepped back. I turned down an invite to regionals and, you know, decided not to do a team, which we kind of had a pretty good team.
You guys always kind of have a pretty good team.
Yeah, we were first in the open, and then we, you know, it wasn't the right decision this year. And we had three girls who all had great opportunities to qualify as individuals, and I felt like that would be their best use of their time. And so, yeah, it's been easy to make good decisions most of the time. There's definitely been a couple that I've regretted, you know, where I've looked back and been like, yeah, that was probably a bad decision, and I paid a price for it. You know, there's been times where I prioritized training over my business, and my business suffered. You know, the Grid League is a perfect example, and this has zero to do with the actual Grid League itself. Yeah, I don't even want to touch on that at all. The experience was, you know, what it was. It was just that my initial gut reaction was to say, no, I don't have time to do it. And then, you know, I kind of talked myself into doing it, and the business suffered with me being gone too much. So, you know, nothing bad to say about the Grid League, but just – at that point in my life, taking time away from my business, away from my gym, was very costly. But yeah, most of the time, I think I've made pretty good decisions, and it basically comes down to knowing your why and, you know, having your priorities set. And when that's the case, you can make a decision and own it, and you don't have to, even if it turns out good, if it turns bad, it doesn't matter. You're not going to regret it because you went through the whole process of and took all the steps to make the best decision you could.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it, man. You know, organizing your life, your priorities first, and then making the decision based on that, rather than making the decision and then trying to organize your priorities afterwards, you know, to fit that decision.
Yeah.
We spoke with Rich a while back, and he talked about how to be the best in the world at anything, you have to be obsessed. Or a little bit obsessed at least, and, yeah, and a little bit selfish. Do you feel like, I mean, you can only speak to your own experience, but do you feel like pursuing something as big as the CrossFit Games, be it on the individual level or the team level, do you think that makes somebody a worse business owner? Knowing the amount of time it takes to train and et cetera, being, yeah, a selfish, obsessed endeavor, do you think it makes them a worse business person?
Short term or long term? I mean, I don't think you can be a business person and an athlete. Like, you can't wear two hats and be. So absolutely, the answer is yes. It makes them, if they're trying to do both at the same time, yes. Has Jason Kalipa's CrossFit Games experience platformed or catapulted him into becoming an extremely successful businessman? Absolutely. Has yours? Absolutely. So pursuing anything at a very, very high level and relentlessly pursuing that, and whether you're all in or mostly in, it doesn't matter, but going through the process of training that hard and committing that much, and whether you succeed or whether you fail, it's a process that builds your character and helps you become who you are. So Short term, absolutely, you're going to be a terrible business person. Right. Long term, you know, pursuing the games might be the best thing that some of these people have ever done for themselves because of what it allows them to do later in life.
Okay, that's interesting. So, because right now we see a lot of games athletes or regional level athletes trying to parlay their success into business, whether it be opening gyms, mm-hmm. online coaching is kind of really the hot popular thing to do now.
Yeah.
Or being like guest hosts at seminars, or you can see these athletes trying to wear both hats.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there's, as an athlete now,
they want to be like you.
They want to be like me.
They want to be like you. That's all there is, man.
I don't know about that, man.
They're just following your footsteps.
Well, I mean, I'll say, speak to my own experience. I own two gyms. We're doing this podcast. I run these travel trips. It's a lot of stuff to do, for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I'm necessarily an elite games competitor anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I train hard. We have a team that went to regionals, and I went to regionals. I've qualified for regionals, you know, the last 8 years or whatever. But
yeah.
I don't feel like I'm in the same training class as, say, you know, Dan Bailey or Bridges or mm-hmm. Kalipa even, or, you know.
Yeah.
I just don't see myself in that level. And I think that maybe that, even that mental, like, acceptance allows me to do all these other things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're on terms with who you are and what's important to you, and by doing that and by being real with yourself and you've had these self-assessments, you've gone through this process, you've done it when you grew your family and you got married a couple years ago, right? Two,
yeah.
three?
Had, yeah.
had just had a baby this last year. So you've gone through this whole process of it, and you're a very smart person. I've always, you know, looked up to you from that regard. And so I wouldn't expect anything different. You know, it makes perfect sense. I think, you know, what's interesting with it, what sparked, you know, this thought when you said that was, I think these guys are copying us. I think for some of them, it's going to be a fault. Because some of these guys have a huge opportunity in front of them to be athletes, and they're actually jeopardizing that by trying to be this sponsorship whore. And not, I don't mean that in a bad way, but I just mean they're trying to look at themselves as a business too much. It's like, if you're going to be top five of the games today, be top five of the games and don't care about anything else. That was different when we were doing it. Okay. There were two things that were different. One is you didn't have to train like it's your full-time job to be top five of the games, because we both did it like not knowing what the hell we were doing.
Right.
So that's
exactly.
Very clear. You know, yeah. We're competing against, you know, a couple firefighters that were just doing it as a hobby.
Right.
And I mean, I don't even know if, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of very interesting stories of our backgrounds.
Yeah.
When we started, there's also this 17-year-old kid named Ben Smith who was there.
Right. We had 17-year-old Ben Smith, the only guy who knew how to butterfly chest to bars. We had Mo Kelsey from Washington,
yeah.
who was in like
third place
at the games, 220-pound fireman in running shorts. You had OPT. You had Jason like passing out on the run. Like, it was not the same level.
No, it was totally different. So, you know, when we look back, we'd be like, oh, you know, I took second at the games. I got a T-shirt sponsorship with Forged Clothing for $1,000 a year. it was, you know, I was. Big time.
Right, that was big time.
That was lucrative. My prize winnings from the game was $0 even. It was phenomenal for second place. So I could look back and see that as a, you know, as a bad thing, or I can, you know, look at how much opportunity it's presented me with. But we had to have a side hustle, you know, to get by. Like, we couldn't just be athletes and focus on that. That was never in the cards for us. We could do that today if we were still at that level, but we've chosen a different path. So I think there's guys today, they need to realize that their opportunity is, you know, placing at the games and being in the top five, the top 10. They are an athlete. You know, it doesn't mean they shouldn't have sponsors. Obviously they should, but I think some guys are too focused on the business part of it, thinking that they have to do that. They'll have plenty of time to do that. You know, if you're a 5, 6, 7 time games competitor, those opportunities are going to be there for you when you get done. The fact that we were pursuing those early on just kind of shows what the landscape was at that time. You know, who wasn't pursuing those early on was Rich Froning. All he cared about was winning.
Right.
And winning again and winning again. And you can see where that's taken him. So it's, to me, it's very clear, where the opportunities are for people. And it doesn't mean people shouldn't be, you know, looking into these kind of side hustles, but they need to understand the consequences and the opportunity cost of doing it.
Right. And they, if they're going to be, well, they just need to know what their priority is. If they really want to be top five of the games or, you know, perennial games contenders, mm-hmm. it takes a full, it's pretty much a full-time job. You don't really have time for side hustle necessarily if you really, unless you're beyond talented, which there are those guys still out there.
Or get lucky.
Or you get lucky, right? Just show up that year, they have the softball toss, and you're one of the only guys that knows how to play baseball.
Yeah.
That helped. I think what's kind of underlying your comments, though, about these guys now being athletes and only athletes is the fact that the business of CrossFit has grown around the sport, right? Mm-hmm. There are sponsors out there now that may be willing to pay athletes enough money so that they don't have to make it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, producer Phoenix, as he's being affectionately called now, he's a teenager and he has lots of peers who are now going to school online so they can train full time at CrossFit. Their parents are supporting them, mm-hmm. Or kids are being homeschooled so they can train full time and not having to worry about, they're making this kind of like their career goal. And while on the one hand, it may be possible for some athletes, like say Dan Bailey is a good example, or Rich, you know, these guys can get enough sponsorship endorsement that they probably don't need to work
mm-hmm.
and just train. Do you think it's realistic for up and coming athletes to kind of bank on that and put all their eggs in that basket early on?
Yeah. I mean, if you have a safety net, yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, usually you're not going to do that if you're, you know, if you are, you know, 18 and have a kid already and you have other things going on, but most 18-year-olds can still live in mom's basement and they can, you know, just kind of hang out and work out. Most people switch careers how many times in their life? Like, you know, five or six. It's a marathon, you know, it's not a sprint. And if you got something that's appealing to you that you want to take on, you know, I absolutely think, and I think the level of competition almost requires it, you know? So I think it is smart and I think it's necessary as well, to do that.
All right. Well, let's spin it forward a little bit more towards people that are trying to make it as a gym owner, right? This is something that we've been doing for a long time. Ben mm-hmm. and I talk about it a lot on and off the air. You have an experience here in the Salt Lake area. I don't know what the demographics are here or the saturation of CrossFit gyms, but talk a little bit about your successes, failures, where you're at now, and kind of some of the stuff you've learned just in the business of owning a gym, owning a CrossFit gym.
Oh, wow. So I'll try and give you the most brief version I can.
Yeah, give me the 10,000-foot view there.
Yeah, so, you know, opened my gym in 2009, and, you know, business was really good, and people were coming in through the door, and we had this amazing community, grew and grew. We got to the point where we were too crowded, and so we were kind of presented with maybe what I saw as two options. We could increase our prices and put a cap on our membership. In hindsight, maybe that would have been the best thing to do. I'll touch on that in a second. What I decided to do was kind of expand to multiple locations. And, you know, that's a long story in of itself, but just kind of the big overview is we committed to one location and then we got extremely delayed on it because there was a huge build out, a renovation project. And so kind of knee jerk reaction, I was like, oh, I got this gym that's still really crowded. I don't have anywhere to put these people. Project B is, you know, going to take a long time. And so let's just sign a lease on our third gym. And that one will be, you know, running smooth by the time that second gym is ready. Running smooth.
Right. He just did air quotes.
Yeah. So air quotes work on the radio, right?
Yeah, definitely on the radio.
So went to three gyms and honestly, all three had a pretty good, we're doing pretty well. I would say two of them were like breaking even and the other one was profiting. But the problem was I had never set up like good management structures and there's a lot of people out there who can help with this kind of stuff. If you're a gym owner, this isn't my expertise, but, you know, there's definitely some really good resources of kind of business coaching that wasn't around or I didn't know how to find it 5-6 years ago. So I should have looked into that. but I didn't have systems in place, and I didn't realize how important that was till later on.
What kind of systems are you referring to?
Having a manager and delegating roles to that manager. Like I basically had trainers in three different gyms.
Right.
And then everyone reported to me. And I've always understood the concept of extreme ownership in that if something goes wrong, I've never pointed a finger once in my life. I'm always like, what did I do wrong? So I owned everything that way, but I never owned my role of a business owner, and realizing that part of the job of a business owner is to hire help and delegate tasks. And so I had way too much on my plate that I couldn't even come close to doing a good job on. So I was letting my clients down. I was letting my trainers down. You know, when you have three gyms, if a sink breaks once a month, you know, you go into your gym and you deal with it. Now you're doing that three times, you know? And so if you don't have people who are in charge of maintenance, in charge of ordering supplements, in charge of whatever, it's not only is your issues are tripled, but you're already stretched out over three locations as well. So it's actually like a compounding effect of what I created for myself was that I'd only tripled the stuff I had to deal with. But it was also harder to deal with it because I was at that physical location less hours in the day. So it was almost like it was five times harder to run a gym having three than a, you know, instead of like my thought going into is like, oh, I've already done this once and been successful, so it'll be easy to do multiple gyms. You know, I was very, very naive.
Were you still coaching?
Yeah.
At all three locations?
Yeah, still coaching, like here and there, kind of plugging myself in where I thought I was needed. I didn't have quite enough people on staff. And so a lot of what I did was just kind of coverage when people go out of town.
Right.
So that was, you know, from a lifestyle standpoint, like having a different schedule every day, you know, trying to support a family, you know, two young kids, and dad's got there's zero routine in my life at that point. And that was really hard, not just on me, but on my family, kind of dragging them through that. So it was, you know, it was, just a lot of mistakes along the way. If I could share any advice with people, I would say, you know, if you're thinking about expanding, talk to someone who's done it. You know, you are in the best situation you could possibly be in if you're thinking about expanding. I've talked to a lot of people who have just gone bigger and increased the size of their facility and increased what they can offer. And it seems at this point like that's maybe a better way to go. So I would definitely look into that. You know, if you've expanded or are having issues, you know, there's probably like creating better systems and hiring managers and delegating tasks is probably where you need to focus your energy the most. You know, look at your retention numbers, look at how many people are leaving your gym. If your attrition is high and if people are leaving your gym, that is your number one problem. Your business is broken right now. So adding a ton of clients, you know, to patch that hole is not going to work.
Right. Yeah. So they're just going to flush out the bottom of the sink eventually anyways.
Yeah.
All right. So you had three gyms. Now you only have two gyms. You seem like you're in a better, happier place. You've got better systems. Why do you think it's so difficult for one person to manage, at least in the CrossFit sphere? Because we talked off the air how we know very few people that are happy owning multiple gyms,
mm-hmm.
right? It just seems like it's maybe more trouble than it's worth and it's less profitable. Like, why do you think it's so difficult for somebody to do that? Is it the market? Is it there's just too much competition, or is it just, you know, we didn't go to business school, or what is it?
Yeah, man, I don't know. My initial gut instinct is that it kind of ties back to like, what's the best part about CrossFit? The community, right?
Right.
So what happens when you have multiple locations? Like you can't grow a community outside of one physical location. You can to some extent, but my gyms are 2 miles apart. It's a 5-minute drive. You know, I can jog from one to the other in 20 minutes and barely break a sweat. I might get mugged, but
I don't think anybody's going to pick you to mug, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully not. But it's all the stuff you love about CrossFit, the, you know, the training, the camaraderie, and the community, it starts to become less personal the bigger you get. And so it's this really interesting thing that I've been just kind of watching, and I'm really interested to just see where this ends up going. But being around since 2009, it's like like CrossFit is gold, you know, and it's not going anywhere. Like we've influenced everything to do with fitness. You know, Greg Glassman and everyone on down the line who's influenced me and inspired me. I'm so grateful for them. And it's such a beautiful thing. And you try to change it or you try and pervert it, it just doesn't work. And maybe it will. Maybe it works somewhere and I just haven't seen it yet. But really, like, the heart of CrossFit is a single gym and a single community and someone who's there who just gives a shit. You know, like, you got to have, whether it's the owner or the head trainer, you got to have that gas factor, that give a shit factor. That's kind of what I think is the overlying theme. Like, what do you think?
I totally agree. When I had three gyms and I now only have two, I was going between the three locations and I was trying to have create the same atmosphere, the same environment at all three locations. And it just wasn't possible. Mm-hmm. So what I tried to do was I had a gym manager at each location. I was the gym manager at the original location. Mm-hmm. And then I hired two guys that were awesome coaches, awesome guys, to be the kind of the face of those other gyms. And we're all CrossFit Anywhere, just different, you know, location. We weren't as close as you guys are, but the vibe is different. Like, it's just, it's necessarily mm-hmm. different at the location where the guy with the give a shit factor, as you call it, you know, that personality is going to pervade that space.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have the same name on the side of the building, and you can even have the same programming
mm-hmm.
coming down. But unless it's the same presence there, like if you could clone somebody, or you have maybe a family business is a way you could do it, where you have a family who runs it and you have like brothers who, you know, kind of
have their own affiliates
and they kind of, because they're going to be more kind of married to each other philosophically, you would think.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really hard to have a consistent vibe. And that's kind of what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
The community vibe. You can have multiple communities that are separated by distance that have the same name and the same program and the same t-shirt and all that. Mm-hmm. But when you walk into the gym, does it feel the same? And that's what people want. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
I wanted three gyms that all felt the same. I'm like, hey, I'm doing this better than anybody else around. I want to replicate this to share it with more people.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the sense of creating the same vibe, I failed. You know, I didn't find a way to make it exactly the same everywhere I went.
And maybe it did have the same vibe, but it just wasn't as authentic. Like, you know, who knows? But it's like every gym just kind of has like its own unique heartbeat. And,
right.
I've learned to, even though my gyms are 2 miles apart, we do some crossover stuff, you know, and we co-mingle in certain areas, but I've lately tried to establish and just let them become their own standalone business. And basically we're this close and I'm looking at each one as its complete own unique business. All they share is a name, and this is the best I think we've been able to do things. Like, I think our product's the best it's ever been at this point. And I think because of that, because I stopped looking at it as we're going to be one big happy family. And I just started letting them evolve into their own unique, special CrossFit gym.
It's hard to do, right? It's hard to kind of let go of that,
yeah,
that idea.
It was really hard to do. And, I had to, you know, heavily lean on the people who are kind of in the trenches every day. And, you know, it took a while to find the right people. You know, one of them was within our organization. She's doing a phenomenal job. And the other one, I put out an Instagram post last September that we were, you know, looking to hire, and I had like 30 people contact me, and I looked over resumes and I interviewed 15 different people. And I basically, you know, hired the person. He kind of got me when most of our conversation was about how much he loved training people. And how I loved working with older people and just helping them move better and feel better and be healthier, you know, and be able to do more, just be more functional. It's like, all right, you got me. You know, that was what sold me. And, you know, it's, that bet has paid off pretty well.
So you have managers at both locations. How do you still kind of influence things from an ownership perspective? Are you writing the workouts and the programming, or are they, or each gym kind of doing their own separate thing?
Yeah, we've just used the same programming at both gyms. I've been writing it since last December and have.
So people still get like the Tommy Hackenbrook, you know, the athlete, the warrior, that type of thing. That's still coming through the gym in some form.
Yeah, yeah. And I try to my main focus right now is honestly I want to work out in as many classes as possible. I still coach about 8 classes a week regularly. So
right.
I'm on the schedule. One location's coaching those. My main goal is just to help our managers be successful, like kind of the business end of it. I've structured their compensation, so it's very incentivized. And so they're extremely 100% tied to the success of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I view my role now as putting them in places to be successful. So if we're going to run a kids program, I try to help them lay the groundwork to run that successfully. And then make sure they're taking ownership of it, because that's kind of the double-edged sword is I can be very helpful, but if I'm too hands-on, then I'm going to be then one who ends up doing it. And then I can't help in other areas where I'm needed.
That's so true, man. That's so true. It's so easy just to be, the old adage is if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
That's the way it ends up happening, right? That's the way it ends up going. All right. So you've kind of taught yourself through time.
Hey, if you want one thing done right, do it yourself.
Yeah.
If you want a lot of things done right, find good people.
Find good people. So now you've got free time to pursue other avenues, and you're one of the guys that I look up to in the CrossFit field as doing a great job of diversifying, mm-hmm. right? So you went on, Broken Skull Challenge and won a bunch of money episode after episode, which was awesome. We already talked about how you've competed at multiple levels at the CrossFit Games. You said you've done some seminars, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What other things has this free time allowed you to pursue, both in the gym and out of the gym?
Well, when I'm home, when I'm out of the gym, I mostly spend time pursuing my wife.
Pursuing her around the house.
Yeah. When the kids aren't in our hair all the time. But now I have 3 awesome kids. We stay busy. And so, the family is extremely important. But we work hard, and I'm up at 5:30 or 6 every single day, or 5, depending. If I'm not coaching, I hop on the computer, try and get 4 or 5 hours of work done, before the day gets started, so I can
4 or 5 hours of computer work,
or phone calls, texts, emails, Jeez. Whatever it is. Try and get as much as I can done by 10 a.m. because around 10, I start getting distracted and more stuff comes up. So it's, we've been grinding, we've been working hard, but, I've been fortunate enough to connect with a ton of people, just like you have. So brute strength is like a kind of a big thing that, we've been doing just online programming with that. And
what is your role with brute strength?
My role with brute strength was, right from the get-go, just to like help launch it. I gave a lot of input in the beginning as far as, programming and the vision for the company, which really what we wanted to do was offer specific program that wasn't a template. Because at that time, this has changed, at that time, a lot of high performance, online coaching was very template.
Right.
It was very much like you're just getting the same things as everyone else. And so we wanted to give people a more personalized experience, but not like we had to come up with some way to do that was feasible, because obviously you can't have 3 really good programmers writing specific programs. You're going to cap out at like 80 clients, And so what we came up with was bringing on a bunch of experts, everybody contributing to multiple programs. And it's, there's basically a testing phase, and we are pinpointing, we're getting very scientific with this, was pinpointing where people's weaknesses are, whether that be a strength, issue or a more engine type of issue, cardiovascular capacity, gymnastics, just a lack of a skill base. Or, and we're even getting more scientific now where we're going into weightlifting testing, where we're going to identify, okay, is this person weak at pulling? Are they weak at squatting? Like, what are their specific weaknesses? And having programs tailor-made to them. So at the end of the day, it doesn't replace a good training environment and good training partners. And we understand that. You know, so we tried to build kind of a virtual community around it, you know, where people can compete against each other. And a lot of people have done that very successfully through Facebook groups and online chat forums. So really just trying to get as many pieces of the puzzle together as possible. You know, each programmer out there is going to have kind of strengths and weaknesses and pros and cons. The guys who are probably the most successful are the ones who have 80,000 people following their program. You know, they're going to get five or six rock stars out of it. And it's really, you know, the measure of success, I don't think, is on how many games athletes you have or, you know, this and that, or how many people you have hitting PRs every week. You know, I think the success is just in, you know, how well, you know, there really isn't a measure, honestly. Like, I see a lot
of... The measure of success is how many clients you have. I mean,
from a business standpoint.
Yeah, from a business standpoint. Like, how many... Brute Strength has been around, what, not even 2 years?
Yeah.
But you guys stormed onto the social media scene.
Yeah.
Really clever.
Yeah, that's Mike. I mean, Mike Kazu gets all the credit for that. He's... his ADD, he finally found a way to channel it. And the dude is just hilarious and very... very savvy.
He's engaging. He's engaging when he's on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the logo, how it incorporates Ute and like the idea of having brute strength, very catchy, very clever. But in the last 2 years, like if the measure of success in business is, you know, clients gains, how is it going?
Yeah, it's going well. I mean, we have a lot of, you know, paying clients and I feel like we have a really strong brand. You know, we've diversified a little bit into different programs. You know, not everybody wants to train for competitions. So, you know, there's just so much opportunity in that space, of programming. And, you know, when you can have a team of guys like Jeff Widmer and Matt Bruce with Olympic lifting, who are national team members, and Nick Sorrell in gymnastics, and Chris Hinshaw is obviously good at what he does with, endurance and the aerobic capacity stuff he does.
He's become quite the rock star, man.
Yeah, he has. And
such
Chris
a good
is
dude.
Such a nice guy. That was exactly what I was going to say. He's just such a nice guy. You can't just not really like him as a person. And when you meet him, you can immediately tell like how much he cares about the people he works with. That's why he's successful. You know, he's very unselfish and a very, very, you know, caring person.
I'm not sure if you can say this on the air or not, but you have a team of coaches like that. How are they compensated for their, is it coming from the client or is it coming from, is all the money go through like a central arm and then it kind of gets dispersed based on how much work they're doing?
Yeah. It's just, think of it as like everyone's an independent contractor.
Okay.
And so you just work out some sort of an agreement. You know, in ways, you know, this is like, we'll take Chris Hinshaw for example.
Yeah.
You know, we might pay him a certain fee, you know, per program he writes. Or we might pay him a certain fee per, you know, he's involved in, you know, let's say four of our programs we offer an aerobic piece to it. We might have two other programs that don't even have an aerobic piece.
Right.
You know, so he might just get paid a commission for what we're using. And then it's also been a way for him to grow his brand as well, you know, through networking. So, you know, each one's got a little bit different agreement just based on what they do. You know, we have some salaried people who do customer service and, you know, who manage more the technology type of stuff. And then most people are like independent contractors, you know, kind of paid for what they contribute.
That's really interesting, man. As far as you know, is Brute Strength the only program out there that has a team of coaches doing it like that?
Yeah. I mean, there's other, I'm sure everybody who's gotten big has a team of staff. You know, it's not just one person doing everything.
Right, but these guys are all spread out across the country that you're using.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like I think CJ Martin has a whole team around him to help run his businesses.
Right.
But, you know, it's him and then people that he works with in San Diego. Like we've been spread out from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty unique the way we've been able to all contribute and all – work within our strengths, you know, and do it
and not
very far away
and not get overwhelmed either. I think that's the biggest thing about online programming for any of these, you know, we talked earlier about athletes trying to capitalize on their platform and their fame mm-hmm. as athletes. When you try to do online programming, it's a chore, you know, especially if you're going to individualize it.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you guys have organized it is really smart.
Yeah. It's finding people with the right strengths, you know, that, like, that's why you haven't heard me talk a lot about how I'm like, writing all these programs out every day. That's not a strength of mine. So as far as the vision of it, of what we wanted to create, what we wanted the product to be, I think I gave a lot of input and a lot of people are on the same page of where we saw there was a need for something like that. Nick Fowler is actually here in Salt Lake City. He owns a gym here and, he loves writing programming.
Yeah.
Absolutely loves it. And so he's, kind of been brought on as architect, you know, because it has gotten overwhelming for different people at different times and roles have shifted. And Nick's doing a fantastic job of being the architect and like he understands a big picture. Yeah. And piece it together. And
gotcha.
So, you know, throughout the year when strength is more of an emphasis, we, you know, we tell Matt Bruce and Jeff Widmer, hey, write up our strength components, our Olympic lifting, and we'll build the rest of the program around that because that's a priority. And then, you know, before the open, okay, who's going to write our Metcons? We're going to build the strength part around that. And so we'll say, hey, Matt, here's our Metcons. Give me three strength workouts to fit in on these days, you know, that are going to work, that make sense, you know. And so we prioritize the coach and what they're riding throughout the year. And that makes their job easier.
Right.
So that they can, it's either like, okay, you got the green light. You write whatever's the best strength program you can, and then we'll build around it. Or we say, here's what we already have. We just need you to fill in these two spots.
Oh, so that's interesting. So it's almost like, I don't know why I thought about this, but it's like a layer cake. You put the bottom layer on first, whatever's the emphasis, and every other layer has to kind of like mold around that.
Yeah.
So that way it's not like you're just forcing like a bunch of square pegs trying to sit, you know, next to each other, right? That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I could subscribe to five different, you know, programs and be like, oh, this one will get me really strong. This one will do this and this one will do this. You know, how many people have you talked to who are doing West Side Barbell or doing, you know, how many times you heard someone say, I'm doing a Bulgarian squat cycle or I'm doing German volume training.
It's like, yeah.
How's that working out for you with the 18 Metcons you're doing a week? You know, like,
right, they don't fit together.
Meant to be done as a standalone piece. Like, there is a reason they're so intense and there's a reason people don't get gains when they try to, like, add that stuff in on top of what they're already doing. You know, it's just doesn't work. Can't do it all at once.
Yeah. You've definitely heard over the past, I don't know, year or so, it's kind of in vogue to talk about, hey, these top guys, they're just doing more CrossFit. Mm-hmm. Just go back to doing CrossFit rather than, you know, doing German volume training and all these things and trying to balance them out. But
yeah,
it sounds like what you guys are doing is kind of bridging the gap there. Like having a focus based on the individual's weakness, but then keeping it within the realm of, you know, general physical preparedness. So you're not sacrificing everything else at the same time.
Yeah. There's a lot of really good coaching out there. And so look at two guys like us, with what we had, natural talent. And also we had years of college football, weight room training, whatnot. So the base we had coming into CrossFit, but think about how long it took you and I to become proficient Olympic weightlifters and to build a foundation of gymnastics work. It took us years. And both of us probably had to seek out some coaching to accomplish that. We can take almost any athlete. I'm not just we, but most people can take almost any athlete and make them proficient weightlifter, give them a gymnastics foundation in a year. You know, it's the level of coaching has gotten so high and everybody's figured out. So now like with Bruce Strength, for example, it's like, okay, you know, most people are doing this in 18 months. Let's try and do this in 12 months. You know, or let's try and do this in 9 months, or how can we get someone as good as possible in 6 months? And then it just comes down to how do we, you know, now how do you get, you know, from good to great? But we want to get people good as quickly as possible. That's kind of our mission.
For the record, I'm still working on getting to great. I PR'd my snatch a few weeks ago, which was pretty exciting. But Ben consistently tells me how much further I still have to go.
What a nice guy.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to go to the phone lines, so to speak. We put up your picture, which you look huge in that picture that we found of you. staring up at the rings. And we asked our listeners for some questions.
For
yeah, it's a good pose.
He's
for
like staring at the wall for handstand pushups.
All right, so we scroll through here and we do a kind of like a listener Q&A. Just randomly pull out a couple of great questions from the group. We had one interesting question from Austin Whistler. You said you didn't really want to talk about GRID, but he asked why you left GRID, which you kind of already answered.
Yeah.
And then he asked, will Grit exist 10 years from now based on your experience? You saw kind of the inside of what the team dynamic's like, kind of what they're doing, trying to grow the business kind of like parallel to CrossFit. What do you think is the ceiling for that?
I talked with some of the guys like the following year.
Yeah.
You know, that Chris Dozois and Ken Baston, some of the dudes I know who are still involved. I mean, not knowing really anything about where Grid's at right now. And
right. I mean, you're not in that world now.
No, not at all. But if I had to predict, will Grid be around 10 years? I'd say no. That would just be my prediction.
Yeah.
I don't see... I'm having a hard time drawing a parallel to successful professional sports. And I thought, you know, Grid made a lot of sense with what they were trying to do. I was really inspired by the vision of it, of trying to create a team sport that's exciting to watch, that fits within an hour, that's spectator friendly. I really, you know, it was very well thought out and very intriguing. I think it's, you know, the market has maybe spoken.
Right.
so to speak. Like, I mean, it was a great thought, but I don't know that it really has legs moving forward. You know, I don't see CrossFit. I would love to be proven wrong, but I don't see the CrossFit Games as being something that could compete with professional sports either. Although the one thing I do notice with professional sports is you have this huge fan base of people who played growing up, you know? So as CrossFit matures, you know, 20 years from now, when you have an entire generation, two generations of people who have done CrossFit and grew up doing CrossFit, there might be enough interest to, you know, to make that a pretty big spectator friendly thing.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
Yeah. Admittedly, I've watched Grid on TV. I've never been to a match in person. Mm-hmm. What it felt like to me was that it seemed like so much was invested off the bat to get a TV contract and to like hit certain numbers of attendance and ratings without allowing it to grow organically, which obviously juxtapose that with CrossFit, which is like 100% like the organic brand, right?
Yeah.
No advertising, no nothing, just people doing CrossFit, right?
Yep.
It felt like it was just trying to do, Grid was trying to do too much too fast. And the reality is that the fan base is CrossFitters. Like,
yeah.
That's the fan base. And they're, you know, if you're trying to say that it's completely different from what they're doing, people aren't going to buy that. Like, no, it's CrossFit. It's faster. It's the same movements, you know, for the most part. It's competitive fitness, mm-hmm. you know? So people are going to see this as a competitor to CrossFit, and you're going to have some people that won't watch it strictly because of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though I think personally, I thought it was great to watch, and I would watch both of them and have no problem at all. But
yeah, you're educated and you can understand. I think you can, you know, I think people like to be able to relate to the level of athleticism it takes to do something. And most people just have no way to relate to that. They watch it and they just kind of get confused.
Right.
Like, I think everyone can appreciate LeBron James swatting a ball off the backboard. We love to watch the freak shows, you know, I mean, we love to see these freaks. And I mean, that's why the NFL, and then you see these big, you know, giants doing this amazing stuff. I think Grid had the potential to do that, to really showcase these, you know, amazing athletes, but there wasn't a fan base there to appreciate it.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard to build that. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And if there's so much money invested right off the bat, people are going to lose their, you know, lose their heads or lose their asses. It's like, you can't support a team like that if you're at a loss all the time.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of the athletes that were in that first season didn't even get paid, and that turned a lot of people off.
Yeah, there's a, you know, they lost some rounds, so now they're kind of trying to do it more grassroots. And
which is the right way to do it. That's what it's going to take.
Yeah, it's just going to take years, not months.
Yeah, and interestingly, I've noticed, and I know you've noticed this as well, there's a growth of not alternatives to the CrossFit Games, but major events with major cash prizes that are, you know, CrossFit events, affiliate events. Mm-hmm. They're not like headquarters sponsored events,
yeah.
But like the Granite Games qualifiers going online. They're doing an open. They're doing the same thing as the open.
Yeah.
A huge pool, like 4,000 or 5,000 men, 4,000 or 5,000 women, all going on, submitting scores, submitting videos. They're replicating the open, and they're going to have basically a games event, you know, in September. Wadapalooza does the same thing, mm-hmm. probably to an even higher level. I mean, Wadapalooza has over 1,000 competitors the day of. It's insane. And it's very well done.
Yeah.
And these have major sponsors, sponsors that are not strictly CrossFit sponsored, but they're pulling in, you know, like car dealers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is really exciting because I see when you compare CrossFit to professional sports, I've always said that I see it becoming like NASCAR or yeah. the PGA Tour, yeah. where you have these independent events like the, you know, the Buick Invitational, mm-hmm. and they're their course and they run their event, and it's PGA sanctioned, but it's not PGA run. And that's what I see the CrossFit season turning out to be eventually down the line, is you're going to have this CrossFit sanctioned event.
Yeah.
And you could have like four majors, you know, with the big prize being the CrossFit Games, of course.
And I don't think that would take away from the CrossFit Games at all, to, you know, first of all. And secondly, I think that would give the opportunity for, let's say, 50 to 100 people to make a living doing it versus 5 to 10.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the big difference is, you know, you get a guy on the PGA Tour, you know, obviously it's an extreme example because it's been around a really, really long time and the yeah. prize money has gotten really incredible.
They're doing well.
But yeah, if you're on the tour, you're a millionaire. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're traveling a ton to play all these tournaments, but like they're paying out to everybody that makes the cut, you know, and that's... Yep. That's what CrossFit needs to be a viable professional sport, in my opinion,
yeah.
is enough big events where they can pay out everybody that qualifies. Because now these athletes can truly be the best that they can be without having to do all these side hustle things like we were yeah. talking about earlier.
And from everything I hear, the CrossFit Games loses money. I mean, it's a great marketing tool for them, for CrossFit Inc. But, I mean, affiliates and seminars is what drives CrossFit, and the community is what drives CrossFit. I think they've done an incredible job with the games. And I think, I hope these other events at some point will be embraced. And I don't think CrossFit's done anything to shun them at all. You know, I haven't heard anything from that route. You know, I think.
Other than you can't use the word CrossFit,
they're
I think.
A good thing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's not a CrossFit event. Absolutely. But I definitely hope at some point it's embraced, you know, and not, kind of ignored, because I think once they embrace it, it could turn into a really productive vehicle.
I totally agree. All right, next question. This is going to be from, let's see, KT Gemsland, from a fellow, quote, kind of too tall for CrossFit guy. What's your favorite Clydesdale friendly hero wad?
The Few, the Proud.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, I mean, the obvious benchmarks for the Clydesdales would be Karen, 150 wall balls for time.
Okay.
And then, you know, a 5K row, something like that. Which has been, I mean, it's been on CrossFit.com.
Just the boringest thing you could ever do.
Yeah. Oh, hero workout, it's hard to I can't off the top of my head think of a hero workout that doesn't have gymnastics or barbell cycling in it.
Right.
Well,
a workout like Randy, like, you could probably still rip Randy even though you're tall, right?
Yeah, but not world record.
No.
I mean, I think that's a 75 pound snatch. That's a good workout for anybody.
Yeah.
It's decent. I really like.
What about the one we did last year at regionals with the rope climbs and thrusters?
Oh, that's a great one.
Tommy V.
Yeah.
That's a Clydesdale workout, right?
I've never done that one, but yeah. I
really
rope
like climbs,
that workout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say any kind of weighted carries. I mean, any, which isn't really a, there, I can't think of a hero workout. I mean, this Army one has some just moving weights back and forth,
mm-hmm.
but it also has 75 air squats or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, for us Clydesdales, it's all about getting outside the box. I mean, just carrying shit and moving heavy objects from point A to point B. That's where we really make our living. So, you know, and I don't think we're going to see a lot of workouts programmed on CrossFit.com that involve like carries and sled pushes. Cause it's just not, doesn't really work universally. You know, they more stick to stuff you can do in the box. So I'd say, you know, Clydesdales, we make our money outside the box. Yeah, let's just go with Tommy V.
All right. All right. This is from some just loser groupie named Iron Mile Ben. He said, at Tommy Hackstaw, who are your biggest influences and what characteristics make them influential to you?
Got to start with my pops, you know.
Are you a chip off the old block?
Yeah, I actually, I'm like a clone of my dad in a lot of ways. Except he has six kids. I'm planning on stopping at four, but we'll see. I'm at three right now.
Still got time.
Yeah. My dad's extremely humble, extremely hardworking, and just a very, very calm demeanor. Never seen him lose his cool. And, you know, as far as leadership, again, just kind of that humble, hardworking guy, lead by example. So he's been the greatest influence in my life. A couple of my football coaches, you know, have been extremely influential. Urban Meyer, who's a coach at Ohio State, and then Kyle Whittingham at University of Utah. From those guys, I learned something that didn't sink in till like years after. Like, I learned how to work hard. I've never worked that hard before, and I've never not worked that hard after. You know, it's a frame of reference thing. It's like once you know what you're capable of, you can do it again and again and again. But until somebody gets that out of you and taps into that potential, you just don't realize, you know, what's possible. So Urban Meyer taught me, you know, the sole purpose of a leader is to set a standard of excellence and demand that everyone around you live up to that standard. And that's where it took years to sink in. The set a standard of excellence I've always believed in. I can't say I've always done that every, you know, day of my life, but I've strived to do that.
Is that a quote that you come back to a lot?
Yeah. Yeah. The demand part, the second part of it, and is the most important part. It's demand that those around you live up to it. And that's holding people accountable. And that's a very difficult thing for probably most people. It's been extremely difficult for me to do. And it's kind of the flip side of, you know, extreme ownership. It's one thing to own your successes and failures and be responsible for them. But it's another thing, just take ownership for everything, you know, around you when you're trying to lead an organization, yet, you know, not holding people accountable. And that's one of my pitfalls that I've had to try to overcome. So learning how to do that, you know, there's definitely an art form to it. But yeah, those are the guys. I got to throw in Mark Devine with Seal Fit as well.
That's right. You did the Seal Fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark Devine is extremely inspirational. And again, he's one of those few people who has allowed me and shown me how to tap into something that I didn't know I had. And I'm forever grateful for him for doing that. Seal Fit is an incredible experience. Forging mental toughness, you know, that's kind of their mantra. It's you know, if anyone, I can't recommend it highly enough. You know, it's just one of those things that you're going to get a life-changing experience out of it, no matter who you are. But don't show up unprepared.
Yeah.
Be ready.
When you were there, did any of the... Because you came with a lot of CrossFit athletes, right?
Yeah, the first time. Both times.
Both times.
Yeah.
Did anybody not make it through?
Yeah.
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 I know in like...
I'm not going to drop names, but yeah, right. Both times people didn't make it through. You know, I've seen CrossFit Games athletes not make it through.
Right.
Seal Fit Kokoro, and I've seen people make it through who 2 hours in, I had them pegged as someone. There's no way this person's going to finish. Absolutely no way. And yeah, there's... And not only they finish, but by the end, they're leading from the front, which... That's what's incredible. You know, there's some people who just kind of float. Like, there's no way they're finished. They just hang around and they finish. But I've seen people go from just the bottom of the barrel to they're thriving on day three. And that is powerful.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive to rebound like that.
Yeah.
All right. A couple more questions from FN Hunt. Who is your pick for male and female podium at the games this year? If you haven't, have you been following any of the regionals or keeping an eye on the sport?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to
just give like a top three. Like any one of these three could win it.
I don't really want to throw at anyone who's not a Reebok athlete because it's my boys.
Right.
I mean, I think the I want to see Panchik on the podium.
He's just so close every year, right?
Yeah, I really want to see Scott on the podium. I don't know if I'm just a fan, you know, like kind of pulling for him. But I think Matt Fraser is my favorite. You know, I think he's my front runner, but it's obviously a close race. Someone who I think will surprise a few people, maybe I'd like to see him surprise people, is Travis Williams from the South Regional.
Oh, interesting.
You know, he's not as well of a known guy, but yeah, I may be wrong, but I would like to see Travis Williams surprise some people. He's got a good head on his shoulders, funny guy. On the women's side, man, it's like all the young people that I don't know as well. I mean, Sarah Sigmund's daughter is...
You can't go wrong with that pick, man.
Extremely impressive. She was extremely impressive last year and before the games. But again, it's going to be, you know, probably two out of three girls on the podium will be from Iceland. That's my pick.
Isn't it just insane how the international girls just wreck shop every year? And the Icelandic girls, I mean, they're like 22, maybe. Yeah. It's like, man, they're not even in their prime yet.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think in 2009, there's this, you know, cute, young, little, strawberry, blonde-haired girl named Annie from Iceland. And I think she's inspired a whole generation. You know, I think it's the Annie effect. And also, there's definitely something in the water up there.
Yeah.
It's such a small country, but... I think Annie really inspired, you know, a whole generation of girls from Iceland, and we're seeing that.
I think you're right, man. She was, I've been to Iceland quite a few times. One of my mm-hmm. best friends lives up there, and, maybe you remember Sven.
Yeah.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Sven Bjorn.
Yeah.
So, we go up and see him quite a bit, and he runs all the trips, the Anywhere Fit trips
okay.
with me. Annie was everywhere up there,
yeah.
especially when she won the games. Back to back, she was all over the radio. So I think yeah. that's actually a really good observation. I think she really did inspire quite a few young gymnasts up
yeah.
there. You know, because all these girls, they all have that gymnastic background.
Yeah,
and just a crazy work ethic.
Yeah, incredible work ethic.
With Viking blood. All right, let's go final question. Well, we just did the podium for the individuals. Let's talk about the teams. You're the only guy that's won, you know, back to back or mm-hmm. multiple affiliate cups, right?
Yeah.
So far. You know something about what it takes to win at the team level.
Mm-hmm.
What teams do you see? This is from Micah Casper. Just to give credit. He said, "What is your bold prediction of the affiliate cup for the games? Top five teams? Why?" I'm gonna supplement that question with, "Who do you see as the biggest challenger to Rich and Mayhem?" Because I see them as a clear front runner.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's hard without... First, I'll lead in this. I love that question. I'll lead in this by just saying this is what I think makes the biggest difference. I think it's easy to look at the team workouts and you can literally break it down and on paper predict who's going to do well, but it just doesn't work out that way. There's a huge factor of camaraderie and teamwork ethic and belief in each other. And it's highly I don't know if it's underestimated, but it just always surprises me every year.
It's hard to quantify, right?
Yeah. It's extremely hard to quantify. So you can have a team that looks great on paper, like Invictus last year, Lauren Fisher, Rasmus Anderson. They were stacked. I mean, ask CJ, that's the best team he's ever sent to the games on paper and maybe the worst performing team.
Right.
And the team that won it the year before was maybe the worst team he had ever sent on paper, and they just gelled and came together. So I love that example. So what it takes for someone to win the affiliate cup is going to be, you know, the teams that have put in the work and who believe in each other and who have trained hard together. That's how we were successful, is we were so tight as a team. And it didn't mean we worked out together every single second of every single day. A lot of us rarely worked out together, but we'd like work out with one or two teammates. You know, we had like an early morning group and an afternoon group. But we were all in constant communication. We went on trips together. We were just very, you know, confident in each other's abilities. There's never any sense of doubt in one another. And just that little bit of doubt can creep in and poison an entire, you know, weekend for a team. So that's what it takes to win. I think Rich's team last year had no business winning. And I just mean this in a very honest way. Like, there's probably five teams that had complete meltdowns or huge letdowns multiple times that points-wise would have beat them if they hadn't have just completely fallen apart. His team, I believe, overperformed to their ability level. You know, everyone on his team did exactly what they're capable of, plus maybe a little bit more. And they were the only team that I saw out of the top 10 who overperformed. I think almost everyone else, if you ask them, would say they probably underperformed at times. And that's how they end up at the top. And obviously NorCal was, in my opinion, by far the best team last year, but they had an injury. So that's,
yeah, they were going to just slaughter the whole field.
Yeah. That kind of negated the, you know, the competition, you know, it became wide open after that. So I think this year, you know, I know James Hobart travels a lot. I know Rich has a lot of stuff going on. He's a busy guy. I don't know their exact dynamic, but if they show up this year, and, you know, they've been kind of all over the place and they're like kind of tight, but not, you know, like maybe they're just awesome and they're killing it. That's probably what they're doing. But if they show up and, you know, they're all in good shape, but they haven't really gelled, if there's another team that wants to step in and that has put in the work and has done that, you know, someone like maybe Diablo CrossFit out of Northern California, they have a really good gym culture, you know.
Yeah, they have a really good culture.
In those affiliates. So, you know, a team like that could probably surprise, you know, surprise and upset the, probably Mayhem would be the favorites at this point.
Yeah. We went back and, participated in their Mayhem for Mustard Seed fundraiser this year.
Oh, cool.
And we got to spend some time with Rich and James, and Matt and the girls as well. And Lindy's down there is a huge addition to their team.
Yeah.
And she's looking strong and healthy and great.
Yeah.
They felt cohesive to me. They felt like they were spending a lot of time together.
Yeah.
Different from last year. I agree with you last year. I thought they totally overperformed. It was almost like, you know, they were like the Warriors. They were like, they kind of won the championship a year ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like you said, a lot of things had to break their way. They were kind of lucky in a lot of ways, but,
but they made their own luck.
But they made their own luck.
Yeah. Let me be clear on that. I'm not saying they didn't deserve the title. I'm saying on paper, a lot of teams can make an argument and say, oh, if we didn't mess up here, we would have more points.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, the score is the score, and Mayhem deserved that, and they went out and took it.
Yeah.
Just want to be clear. So, you know, there's a lot of haters out there. There's a lot of Rich fans. So
yeah.
they like to get mad at me.
No. Not at all. I mean, there's a reason why Rich always wins stuff, you know.
He puts in the work.
He's really good at winning. All right. That's about it for today. Tommy, thank you for sitting down with us. Just a quick little shout out for our listeners. Where can they follow you and kind of catch up with you and your family as it grows and all those kinds of things online?
Yeah. just Tommy Hacksaw is kind of my alter ego. That's my I've just adopted that, you know, especially since the Broken Skull Challenge. I'm now Tommy Hacksaw on Twitter and Instagram. You know, we didn't get a chance to touch on this, but doing a lot of gym marketing stuff right now. It's not really something we need to spend a lot of time talking about, but basically if you're in an affiliate and you want to grow your membership, I'll have some material. You can find it, you know, through my Instagram or whatever. But there's some really cool success stories being able to help gyms add 50 to 70 people in 2 weeks through, you know, through this amazing program that this guy created. So I've been helping him, you know, as a sales rep, which has kept me quite busy. But it's been the most rewarding thing I've ever done, you know, in the 7 years I've been involved with CrossFit. I now spend, when I'm not focusing on my gym, I spend all my spare time basically working hand in hand with gym owners, helping them run this program, helping them add clients, and basically, like in a lot of cases, we've saved their businesses. You know, I'm having emails sent back to me almost weekly, like, Tommy, thank you so much for this program. Like, we're planning on shutting our doors, and now we're looking to hire new coaches. Like, this has been the most amazing thing we've ever done. So you can tell I'm like very passionate about it. It's been a very cool deal. So I'll be, you know, if you don't like self-promotion, shameless self-promotion, like, stop following me, because I'll be talking about that a lot on social media. But, you know, if you're a gym owner, if you're, you know, if you're a gym goer and you think, your gym could benefit from something like this, would love to, you know, just have a conversation. Yeah, but mostly, you know, my Instagram's mostly like probably 90% wife and kids these days. When you got a baby, you just gotta, you know, you only post the good pictures, but it's like five a day. So it's, I'm sorry if that bothers people, but, you know, have a kid someday and you'll understand.
Yeah. I'll keep following you, man. I'm not gonna unfollow you for that.
I appreciate it.
All right, follow us at BTB Podcast on Instagram. Subscribe to our newsletter at www.btbpodcast.com, and go to iTunes and subscribe. We got great behind the scenes stuff coming up from this interview with Tommy, his beautiful gym downtown, and a lot more stuff coming up as we lead to the CrossFit Games.
My Frosty.
Yeah, you're Frosty. anyways, until next time, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Blair. Thanks a lot, Ben. Thanks for nothing.